This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Hello and welcome to The Bunker Daily. I am your host, Alex Andreu. I never said all actors are cattle, Alfred Hitchcock once defended himself. What I said was all actors should be treated like cattle. Well, there's trouble at the ranch. American actors have joined writers in a double strike, the likes of which Hollywood has not seen since 1960, when a plucky Ronald Reagan led actors to join strikers and walk off the shop floor. My guest today couldn't be better placed to talk us through it all. He's a screenwriter living in Los Angeles. He's been a member of the Writers Guild of America since 1991. The highlights of his screenplay credits include Chicken Run, James and the Giant Peach, Charlotte's Web, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, The Spiderwick Chronicles, Over the Hedge, which is my favorite, and Smallfoot. Welcome to The Bunker, Carey Kirkpatrick.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Carey, such a pleasure to have you in The Bunker. Let's start with the basics. The Writers Guild of America, the WGA, went on strike first after negotiations with major studios and networks collapsed. Briefly, what does your union want?
Well, the main issues center around residuals and fair pay on streaming platforms. So the rise of streamers has drastically changed the landscape of the way we all consume our entertainment. And we're working under an old business model. Mm. So for those who don't know, the contract is called the Minimum Basic Agreement. And that agreement, I think it gets renegotiated, I don't know, every 6 or 7 years, or maybe it runs 10 years. Mm. So technology keeps changing. And whatever was set forth in the previous MBA, as we call it, gets outdated, you know, by the time we come around to renegotiating. And back when we negotiated the current MBA, streaming was just on the rise. And there were some provisions that were made, but not enough to cover how massive it's become. And everybody's got subscriptions to streamers. So trying to figure out how writers get paid off of passive income from that is the primary goal. And a lot of talk around writers' rooms on TV shows and the rules that govern the rooms. Now, and this is very different. I know a lot of British writers, and the way we do things in the American TV system are vastly different than the way British writers do things. So I often don't get a lot of sympathy from British writers that are like, oh, boo-hoo, you only have six writers in your room.
But that's a fascinating parallel then, because the last double strike was again all about how consumption of the thing you were doing had changed because of the advent of television. And that major negotiation was around how you would receive residuals when basically networks sold the shows on to other television stations. So there's a real parallel there with what's happening here.
Yeah, reuse, basically. Reusing, you know, paying you one flat fee and reusing it. 1960 was kind of the advent of residuals. And my understanding, too, is that that's when contributions to pension, health, and welfare started as well, which is obviously, I mean, look, we don't have a national health service, so yeah. It is a huge deal over here, because the way the Writers Guild and SAG works, that you have to make a minimum amount in a year in order to qualify for your insurance.
Is this strike of a predetermined length, or is it open-ended like last time?
Oh, it's open-ended.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happened afterwards was the Actors Union, the Screen Actors Guild, which amazingly is led by the nanny herself, the fabulous Fran Drescher, also joined the strike. After that negotiation collapsed, are their list of demands very similar to yours, or are they very different?
I think we are aligned in two main categories, which are residuals. And again, residuals is the biggie because there was a formula that broadcast and cable used, and that formula doesn't quite apply to streaming. And part of it is because there's no ad revenue. I mean, honestly, that's the main reason. And then there's also a lot of talk over how AI is being used and the rules that govern AI.
Now, over here, rules are pretty strict for professional actors, not as strict as they used to be, but still most performers are members of Equity, which is our union. But with writers, things are a lot more loosey-goosey this side of the pond. How universal is union membership for actors and writers over in the States?
If you want to be a professional writer working in film and television at the highest levels, you must be in the Writers Guild. So the Writers Guild covers film and TV and some animation on TV. And if you were to go out and write for somebody right now, especially if you're writing for a signatory and you're a non-WGA member, if the Guild found out and you applied for membership later, you would not be allowed in because you scattered during the strike.
Films can take a long time to make. Smallfoot, which I think you also directed, took 6 years from pitch to screen. Now, I know that's animation, but I'm just using it as an example of the sort of horizon of things. Television series, on the other hand, are a little bit like laying track while the train is sort of still going.
Exactly.
So is that where you expect to see the most instant disruption, as it were?
My answer is the line between what is TV and what is movie is starting to get really blurred. Mm-hmm. One of the issues is streamers are basically saying, we're not going to pay you feature rates for this because this is for streaming. And it's like, well, the work is the work, regardless of where it ends up and if it ends up as a theatrical release. And sometimes, you know, Netflix now has their own theaters, so they'll release in the theaters for a couple of weeks before it goes on their streaming platform. So what is TV? What is feature? They're trying to get some clear definitions that even just establishing minimums for if you write a movie specifically for a streamer, that it's no different than if you were to be hired to write for a feature.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Now, you explained how strict the rules are for writers. I know they're very strict for actors as well. They're not allowed to make personal appearances to promote stuff or do readings or auditions or rehearsals, voiceover. Even wardrobe fittings are out of bounds, apparently. But do those rules apply outside that professional sphere? What I mean is, I know you also write theatre shows. You wrote a very successful Broadway musical with your brother, Wayne, I think. Is that still allowed under the terms of the strike? And what about outside the US? Are we likely to see loads of Hollywood stars suddenly in London's West End, which they love to do occasionally, because they can do that sort of work outside the US? How do those rules apply?
To answer your first question, So theater is not covered under the Writers Guild. And in fact, I have a show on the West End right now, which is the Mrs. Doubtfire, the musical, which is over at the Shaftesbury.
Oh, amazing. I've seen that being advertised.
Yeah, so John O'Farrell, who is a British writer, who is our other partner on our first musical, Something Rotten, and then Mrs. Doubtfire, which is there now. Those are all covered, like I said, under the Dramatists Guild. separate union. So live theater is not covered by the Writers Guild. And then the bigger question becomes, so you've got British production companies, and I'm working with one right now on a different project. And a lot of times the British production companies will have two different entities within their company. They'll have one that is a Writers Guild of America signatory so that they can hire American writers. But then they'll also have a UK company because the UK has their own Writers Guild. And they may not necessarily go through the Writers Guild of America because they're not members. So I've had a couple of British production companies say to me, I think legally we can be meeting, you know, we could meet with our writers over here, even though we have two companies, but they have been sensitive to, we don't want to appear like we're not in support.
Yeah.
Because I will say a lot of producers and agents are very much in support of this strike because negotiating has become so difficult. It impacts them too. And negotiating specifically with companies like Netflix and Apple and Amazon has become really very difficult because of precedents that they don't want to break. And they've come in and, you know, found loopholes in the minimum basic agreement that they're not necessarily breaking any rules. They're just, they have put things into play that used to be kind of an understanding that things aren't done that way. And if it's like, well, it's not in the minimum basic agreement, so we don't have to do it that way. It's like, technically you're right. And that's what we're going into correct. But those three companies, Netflix, Apple, Amazon, are new to the AMPTP, the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, which is the collective organization that we are negotiating with. And their goals are not necessarily aligned with the legacy companies, is what they tend to call them. So Paramount, Disney, Sony, Warner Brothers, the sort of classic legacy studios. They have a slightly different understanding of how the business works. And the other companies are coming in a little bit more like a tech company.
Disruptors.
Well, and just their goals of what they want and how they run their business are not quite aligned. First of all, the studios built Netflix, right? So the studios created their main competitor for a future market by selling them as reuse all of their library. So when Netflix got Friends and The Office, and you could watch it ad nauseum, you know, for $12 a month, people signed up. You know, there were no other streaming services from the studios. And then once they started creating their own streamers, well, they had already made deals with Netflix. Valuable components of their library were on Netflix. Now, Netflix saw this coming 5, 6, 8 years ago and started creating original programming. Because I think they knew those contracts were going to run out. And now that they have eyeballs on their service, they need to create their own content, which is what they started doing en masse, right, in huge, huge amounts. And just with this sort of throw up, you know, 400 darts at the target, and some of them are going to hit. And that's when they got House of Cards and things like that. But their whole goal was to get market share. They were not focused on profitability.
Now, Carrie, I want to use our last few minutes to kind of look forward and address this issue, concerns about AI and its use. I understand them. It basically cannibalizes real people's work to produce something which is distinct in terms of intellectual property. And that is an existential threat to someone in a profession like yours. But is there a danger, do you think, that with this sort of action, you actually push the industry further into the arms of CGI actors and AI-generated voices and ChatGPT scripts? Is that a balance that you're worried about?
Every industry is scrambling to get a hold of what are the regulations around AI. I was just listening to a news report yesterday about, like, Sarah Silverman is suing Google and ChatGPT because you could go on to ChatGPT and say, write me this in the style of Sarah Silverman, and it'll spit something back. And part of it is because it has consumed all of her material, and she is suing them to say just the act of scraping it and consuming it is a violation of copyright. And you're making money off of this, off of my creativity. There are several lawsuits that are kind of in the works right now, and I think they're going to work their way through the courts to set up precedent faster than they're going to work their way through Congress over here, because nothing goes through Congress fast over here. So it's going to take years. I mean, Congress hasn't even figured out how to manage social media, and we've been at that for a long time. So I think we need to get some rules and regulations around how AI is used. But and this is probably even more terrifying for actors. I remember looking at Fran Drescher's press conference when they were out there, and even though the studio said they offered a landmark deal for AI, there was still something about how they could scan background actors and take their likeness and use it, reuse it as much as they wanted.
That's quite frightening.
It is.
Carrie Kirkpatrick, thank you so much for taking time off from telling stories to tell this important story. And I also have to say that you have another film coming out, which I am inordinately excited about. Chicken Run 2 is coming up on Netflix just before Christmas, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I have to be careful how much trashing of Netflix I do in my... because they are releasing my next movie. But yeah, very, very excited. 23 years later to have another Chicken Run finally out.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Remember, there's a new Bunker pretty much every day. So if you like our work, you can and should support our work, or we will go on strike. You can do so for as little as £3 a month on the funding platform Patreon. Just search for Bunker Podcast Patreon. The artist Bruce Garaband once said that creativity is about fashioning the perfect out of the ordinary. In other words, the Schopenhauer notion that originality is not about seeing something nobody else has seen, but seeing what everyone can see and thinking about it in a way nobody else has thought. Perhaps then, as creators, we need to trust that no algorithm will ever do that. And maybe executives need to give proper respect to professions that spin gold out of nothingness, that take the intangible and compel it into being by sheer force of will. This is Alex Andreu in the Bunker saying over and out.
Hello, I'm Ros Taylor with news of Oh God, What Now?, the politics podcast that's never going to leave its voter ID at home. On Friday's show, it's 6 months until the US election and Donald Trump is stuck sitting on trial in a New York courthouse. Is he bulletproof or can Joe Biden turn around the polls? In the second half, it's local elections week, but we've steadily taken power away from local authorities. What if we gave it back? And in the extra bit for supporters, is there a right level of ruthlessness in politics? That's Oh God, What Now? With me, Ros Taylor, Raphael Baer, Hannah Fern, guest Nikki McCann Ramirez, out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Bunker USA was written and presented by Alex Andreu. The producer was Liam Tate, with audio production by me, Simon Williams. The managing editor is Jacob Jarvis, the group editor is Andrew Harrison, with music by Kenny Dickinson and artwork by James Parrott. The Bunker USA is a Podmasters production.